There is a new snapshot tonight of how many Canadians are opting for medical assistance in dying. Since it became legal in 2016, the rate at which the option has grown in Canada has been faster than anywhere else in the world. CTV's Allison Bamford on the findings.
More and more Canadians are opting for medical assistance in dying.
We can expect an increase with any new medical practice.
The most recent data shows MAID accounted for 4.1% of all Canadian deaths in 2022, the number of medically assisted deaths growing roughly 4.5 times higher than in 2017, the first full year MAID was legalized. Canada's rate nearing that of the Netherlands, which legalized physician-assisted dying in 2002.
We want to make sure that people aren't choosing MAID because they feel like they have no other choice or they don't have adequate aid in living and not just in dying.
But the numbers aren't surprising for doctors providing MAID who say more awareness and patient control are likely driving the increase.
They are day in, day out suffering, knowing that things are not getting better. So people are making this wish.
Patients must meet the federal criteria and undergo a thorough assessment before receiving MAID. A recently developed course now standardizes training for MAID assessors.
We as clinicians have to figure out, are they intolerably suffering? Is there anything else we can offer them to ease their suffering, to relieve their pain, to relieve their stress, to relieve anything?
Earlier this year, Ottawa announced plans to delay the expansion of MAID to patients whose sole underlying condition is mental illness. That expansion is now slated for March 2027. Allison Bamford, CTV News, Regina.
Sounds so nice. It's MAID. Medical Assistance in Dying, MAID. So we choose MAID. So they call it MAID when they call in people to kill your loved one or kill you. It's a assisted suicide. It is death. It's killing people. It's as simple as that, and yet word games are being played around the globe on this issue. And Canada, our neighbor to the north, has become one of the most proficient. MAID has assisted so many people in dying. They're up to like nearly 4% of the deaths in Canada are from MAID. And it's not about convenience or concern for the dead. It just isn't. It's spreading like a cancer, and we're going to talk about it today. In fact, in one country, they are making it now available for anyone that's 75. Anyone that's 75 is so old, you now can kill yourself, and it's legal, and they'll help you do it. And so these are things mentally ill, depressed. Think about how many that includes from after COVID. Think of all the kids that are mentally depressed and sometimes mentally ill because of the way that they've been, what they've lived through and how they've had to cope. It's just out of control. And so we're going to talk today about medically assisted suicide, about the choice to do that, about the choice of others to do that to you, and kind of think through it a little bit. And I think it will be very beneficial. I hope that at least that's my aim. Our life is what we're about here, because life is sacred. And this is Sanctity of Life Month. And we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. And sadly, since Roe was overturned, babies' lives are even at a greater risk. The abortion pill accounts for over 60% of all abortions, making this tragedy available 24/7. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines. Preborn has rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion. And every day, on average, they rescue 200-plus babies. When a woman considering abortion hears her baby's heartbeat and sees her precious baby's ultrasound, her baby's chance of life is doubled. Preborn shares free heartbeats and God's love for mother and child, and they need our help. For just $28, the cost of a dinner, you can sponsor an ultrasound to introduce a mother to her baby for the first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving babies. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And make your most generous donation here at the beginning of January of 2025. Well, you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7, and you can call us at 662-821-2425. 2040 and leave a voice message. We love hearing from you. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. We are available on social media platforms, Facebook. By the way, I just saw Mark Zuckerberg today announce that he's going to do away with the censorship on Facebook, at least a lot of the censoring that they've been doing. He just made a big announcement, so that's pretty interesting. So maybe we won't be blocked anymore from some of the things we want to share with you. So Twitter, Instagram, Truth Social, YouTube, Telegram, really any of the major platforms, we're there. And you can listen to the podcast at AFR.net. That's our home base, AmericanFamilyRadio.net. You can go to my website, SandyRios.com, which is a great source of information and an easy way to listen, or Spotify or Amazon or Apple, whatever is your choice. All right, today is really, really an important discussion. We're going to talk to the editor of First Things magazine. His name is Rusty Reno on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Medical assistance in dying was legalized for adult citizens in Canada in 2016, with the requirement that a person's natural death had to be reasonably foreseen. In 2021, this requirement was removed, and people with chronic illnesses became eligible for an assisted death. Plans to include the mentally ill have been delayed, but the expansion is expected to come into effect in 2027. Today, proposals to give terminally ill people in England and Wales the right to choose to end their life will be introduced in Parliament. Labour MP Kim Leadbeater is putting forward the bill and says now is the time to hold a fresh debate on the subject.
All right, that was Good Morning Britain, and this is Sandy Rios, of course, with you. This is such a shocking topic, and it's not getting much play. Actually, in Canada, in our neighbour to the north, I think something like 4%, almost 4% of deaths are from assisted suicide, whatever name they give it, in a certain location. They've made it sound really nice and convenient. It's a way of, you know, getting out of a very difficult situation, and people are opting for it. What's happening here? Why have we lost our sense of the value of life? We talk about the value of life every time I'm at this microphone. We talk about it when it comes to abortion, but this is no different. Life is sacred no matter what end of the spectrum that you're on, and we do not take it lightly from others or from ourselves. That's my opinion, but our next guest, I'm sure, has an opinion himself. His name is Rusty Reno, and he is actually a leading theologian and the editor of First Things magazine. Now, First Things is, I always think of it as the intellectual arm of Christianity, but it's, I guess you would say that it is America's most influential journal of religion and public life. There are some great things. There are some great things to make you think. And Rusty joins us this morning. I think you're out west, aren't you, Rusty?
No, I'm in New York City. We First Things magazine is right here in Gotham. we feel like we need to contend for the future of our civilization from the place where some of the bad things come from.
That's so funny because that conjures up a lot of thoughts to me about how many people died there during COVID and just the disregard for human life everywhere, whether it's violence or whatever. We are awash with the loss of the value of human life. But let's go back in time, Rusty, because I've been doing media a long time, and I remember very well when the Netherlands was shockingly the first country or set of countries that decided to legalize euthanasia. And I remember that they would have their citizens carry, like your driver's license, always in your pocket. You must have this card that said, please do not kill me, basically. Because if you had an accident and went to the hospital, you needed a card that said it's not okay to let me die, or it's not okay to do something to cause me to die. And that's the shocking way I first became acquainted with this. How far have we gone? Which country is the most extreme on this from your point of view?
Well, I think with the Netherlands, Belgium, that in both of those countries, what started as, oh, this is just for people at the end of a terminal disease, we're really just talking about people who are in the final stages of cancer and so forth, that the laws continue to be changed and expanded. And so now in Belgium, there have been young people with chronic depression and psychological distress who have been killed or have been assisted in killing themselves by medical professionals. And then probably the most dramatic story is Canada, which instituted doctor-assisted suicide, or what the euphemism they use is medical assistance in dying. And I think it's been a six-year period, there's been a dramatic increase in the percent of deaths attributed to doctor-assisted suicide. I think I read something recently that it's the fifth or sixth leading cause of death in Canada, which is really very shocking. And it's the same problem there. You have homeless people who say, my life's not worth living, and the government, you know, signs off, these panels sign off, okay, well, this person can have access to lethal drugs and kill themselves. So it is really quite shocking, and it's been a very rapid change over the last decade.
You know, I was reading an article in preparation for our conversation, and this was from VOA News about Canada, and I was trying to see who said this. But someone that they interviewed said, I think that there was pressure from a number of sources, including provincial governments in Canada, a number of them who felt that they could not provide the funding nor the resources for persons who are depressed to receive access to healthcare professionals such as psychologists and psychiatrists. So in these places like England, the British, the socialist medicine countries, from what I'm reading, it seems like a pressure of these systems that they don't have the money to take care of people who are in need, so it's easier just to, assist them in dying. Is that an overstatement?
No, I think you're right. I think we have a kind of a perfect storm, or the word perfect suggests good. But what we've got here is we've got a society with a dramatic kind of almost collapse of recognition of the sanctity of life in concert with a medical establishment that is increasingly pressed financially. And so there are all kinds of perverse incentives in the medical system to sort of nudge people in the direction of choosing this option for exactly the reasons you say, which is limited resources. In fact, there's testimony from people who have killed themselves in Canada that it was desperation. They couldn't get medical treatment. They couldn't get psychiatric care. And they felt like this was the only option before them. So, it's got to be troubling to all of us who care about the sanctity of life that you have this economic pressure nudging people, pushing people in the direction of ending their lives.
You know what this reminds me of? When Sarah Palin was the vice presidential candidate with John McCain, she was saying when she was running that because Obamacare, which was socialized medicine for this country, would create death panels. And they would decide, you know, whether you had the right to live or die. And she was spot on. She was spot on. I don't know.
Pilloried in the press for being an extremist, but she saw what direction we were going.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what's actually happening, Rusty, because I read a lot of articles and watched a lot of videos yesterday preparing for this, and just saw some disturbing things. I saw one, there was a mom, I believe from Great Britain, and she had a son who's like 38, 43, perfectly healthy, a nice-looking guy, and she had several kids, like four kids. And they were all married and happy. He was not married, and he was very depressed. And he left to go on a vacation, they thought. And it turned out he went to this place, I believe, in Switzerland. I think it was Switzerland. Just signed up to help with killing himself because he was depressed. And so they thought he disappeared. They issued like a missing persons thing, and they were trying to find him. And finally, they found out somehow that he had killed himself. So this family was in the car tracing his footsteps and just trying to grieve like her boys. And it's so we have stories like that, and I'm sure you have a lot. In fact, I would be interested to know how in the world did you get interested in this subject?
Well, I think there's this life. We have obviously the pro-life cause with respect to the unborn, and this is many people are they're aware, obviously, of the horror of our society that will allow in many states now allow for. In fact, I live in New York, and we passed a constitutional amendment that guarantees a right to abortion up to the time of birth. And it's just horrifying to me that I live in a society where our political leaders are okay with killing a child. I mean, you know, you can understand how people are morally confused about the origins of life and conception. Okay, but really? Ninth month? That just seems insane to me. And then also, which is, this is related to a lack of awareness and concern about the sanctity of life at the end of life. And I think we see, in general, over the course of my life, a decline in the stigma associated with suicide. And now we're supposed to accept it, and we're not supposed to judge it, and acknowledge that, you know, it's a tragedy. But stigma is like, these are the guardrails that help keep vulnerable people from harming themselves. And I think we've deregulated our society morally at so many levels, and this is one of them. And I think it's just not enough attention is being paid to this. Now, the good news is that, you know, Oregon was the first state in the United States to legalize doctor-assisted suicide, and many people thought that it would sweep the nation. But in the last few electoral cycles, there have been propositions to legalize it that have been defeated. So it's my hope that the American people will step back from the precipice here and not go the route of Belgium and Netherlands, Switzerland, Canada, and now we see happening in England. So I hope that we can avoid this fate. Because what does it say about a society when we're kind of ushering people to their death prematurely? It bespeaks a kind of insensitivity and disregard for the weak and the vulnerable. We're vulnerable as children in the womb, and we're vulnerable at the when we're sick and we're ill, whether it's psychological or physical. This is a time when people need to rally to try to defend life, not to encourage us to end our lives.
You know, on the broader spectrum of this, Rusty, I think of, you said you were in New York, so I'm picturing this video I saw just a few days ago of this young man going through the turnstile and pushing a young guy, like 38, I think, off the platform right in front of the train and killing him. And it's like become sport in the subway stations. And then, of course, we have there's these shootings everywhere. People, just a disregard for human life. And what that reminds me of, Rusty, I remember thinking, because I've traveled a lot, that life is not hasn't been sacred in places like India, where people are all over the streets and people are hungry and people are dying, at least they were in years past, and other places, starvation, or in China, where they would just drown babies that were not the first baby born. And I think, well, this is third world. This is where there is, well, first of all, no Christian influence. They have a different frame of reference, and life is not sacred. And so this is just so upsetting. That's too light a term. This is so disturbing that our country should have this pivot to not valuing human life. That's what has made us as a nation stand out. We've gone to great lengths, no man left behind, in the military, saving our babies, caring for our elderly. Medical care flourished out of this, all kinds of medications. You can argue that we've gone too far, but We have valued life, and this is very upsetting. And what do you think the seed of this is? What do you think the seed is that's planted, started this?
Sandy, I think you're absolutely right to draw a connection between an indifference to the sanctity of life in the womb, indifference to the sanctity of life at the end of life, and support for doctor-assisted suicide. You're right to make that connection to this kind of senseless violence, because I do think it bespeaks a declining social norm that would lead a young person, you know, school shootings and things like that, that we see that there's a kind of taboo against taking the life of another. And that seems to have weakened. And again, it has to do with, I believe we should measure our society by its effect on vulnerable people. You know, people who are psychologically disturbed. I mean, this kind of mass shooting didn't happen when I was young and growing up, and it seems to be happening more and more frequently. And I think you put your finger on it. I do think the decline of the influence of Christianity and the rise of people who are not affiliated with Christianity, so-called nuns, now one-third of the population and a larger percent among the young. This strips our society of the most fundamental moral norms. And, you know, I agree with you. I think it's fundamental to the West, the sanctity of life. And it's one of our great achievements, our great moral achievements of Christian civilization. And it seems to be slipping away.
You know, I'm going to read from this article that's in First Things, which you're the editor of. There's a lot of things. This is an excellent article. It was so thick with profound statements that it was hard for me to make my way through without, you know, underlining everything. But the author says that the idea that it can ever be good for a human being to commit suicide brings us to the final stage in society's devaluation of human life. And then, of course, we've made it good. I watched a doctor from Canada pretty much boasting. She was being interviewed in this video I watched yesterday. She's killed 432 people, I think, something like that. Oh, yes, it's just fine. Yes. Oh, how do they? Oh, well, they're fine. They're, you know, sometimes they bring their families, and sometimes, yeah, and sometimes they opt for, you know, whether I would put they would put an IV in, and then I insert the chemical. And we always, you know, in Canada, we use a sedative. So we put them to sleep, and then I insert that. And, oh, yes, it goes very well. The glibness is just shocking. And as I understand it, Rusty, they are actually having parties now, like they don't call them assisted suicide parties, but it's like a big wake right before the person, you know, goes through the process. I don't know how widespread that is, but maybe you know something about that.
Well, I think Pope John Paul II referred to the danger of a rising culture of death. And when we celebrate death, that's a very dark sign, a sign of a kind of encroaching darkness on our society. Life is a gift, and we should cherish that life. And it's not ours to dispose of our lives. We have to, you know, cherish the gift of life and serve. You know, serve others and God in the life that we're given. And for some of us, you know, part of that gift involves suffering, and we have to learn, how to accompany and assist others as they endure suffering, because that's part of the reality of life that we're given. There's a meaning in suffering. You know, there's an old Christian understanding that in the Catholic tradition that you offer up your suffering to God, that it might be of assistance to others. Your suffering might somehow alleviate the suffering of others. It's a mysterious thing, but it's a very powerful way to understand the value of suffering, rather than seeing that we have to somehow escape it by our own choices. And, of course, the most dramatic choice is to end your life.
I think it's when you're in a situation that's like, that's the woman that I saw who had ALS, and I've had like four people very close to me, at least four, maybe five, die of ALS. So I'm very familiar with what it does and how it ravages the body. It's a horrible way to die, horrible. So you see this woman who has ALS and she wants to take her life, and you, part of you says, well, I understand that, but I do think that there is no other reason not to do it, Rusty, other than a faith in God, because God, in through Scripture, said in Genesis, before he ever gave us the commandments, that we did not have the right to take another's life. You don't. And he says that, you know, if you do that, your blood will be shed. You don't have the right. And then, of course, it's very clear in the commandments. But that includes your own life, of course. And we've understood that for years. But now that there's no regard for God, at least very, that's not true. It's an overstatement. A lot of us love God. And a lot of us serve faithfully because we believe it's true. We love his word. But a lot of people, as you said, are the nuns in this country now. They have no faith at all. And our kids, you know, it's possible to grow up in the United States now without ever hearing the name of Jesus or even hearing about God. And so there is no, apart from that, let's say, Rusty, we're talking to atheists. Why shouldn't they kill themselves if they get in a tough spot? What case would you make for that?
You make a good point that without reference to the transcendent, it's difficult to see how your life has any higher meaning. And if it has no higher meaning, then your suffering is pointless. And, you know, then it's hard to explain why you shouldn't just sort of end it. So I do think, although I think you can talk to non-believers about examples of people who have been an inspiration in their courage in the face of death. And I think we all know people, and you gave the example of your friends with ALS, that there's a powerful dignity in people who are able to embrace their condition in life, even if it's difficult and painful, that it is an inspiration to others, actually. So I guess I would say to the atheist, if you can't understand your life in reference to God, think about others, and that your example could be an inspiration to others to have fortitude in the face of suffering.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's a good response. I also think as believers, because we live in this world and we have to suffer. I mean, there are very few people who never go through some suffering of some sort. And life gets very hard, very, very difficult sometimes. But we cannot see the future. We don't know what's going to happen. And it's been my experience that God does some of his best work during suffering, not only in the person, but also in family members. Sometimes discoveries are made, peace is made, and also, most importantly, just the knowledge of God and understanding, because, Rusty, as believers in Christ, this life is not all there is. And there's so much of a future waiting for us eternally. And this is the thing. You need time to work through that. If you cut your life off quickly, you miss all of that, and so does your family. So
I agree. You know, suffering is a kind of it cracks us open. You know, we tend to be kind of me-centered, you know, curved in on ourselves, thinking about ourselves. And suffering for many of us is a moment when we have to go, like, wait a minute, I'm not in charge. I have to, like, what is the purpose? Where am I going? Where am I heading? What does this all mean? And that does open up people to thoughts about God. And that, you know, people can have real conversions in these times of suffering. And I think, and I agree with you, to close that off is a great spiritual loss, not just for the person committing suicide, but as you point out, for family members and others who, you know, in the times of trial and tribulation, we can often make these discoveries.
I think too, you know, we're in a time where we ignore death. We act like it doesn't matter. Like we don't, death is not, okay, now I'm going to go to a sort of a different topic, but death used to be a part of human existence. So remember in the old days, the whole idea of calling the place where you entertained people the living room, that's what we do now, it's the living room. But the reason it's called the living room is because in the old days, That was the place where people did visit, and the parlor was the place where you laid the dead, where you displayed them. And people in your home, when they died, they went to the parlor, and the other room was the living room. It was a part. Grandpa died. You put nickels on his eyes, and you mourned him. Everyone died. Children died. And so death, animals died. But we really, really protect people from death, don't you think? And
it's a kind
we
of
act
paradox,
like it doesn't exist.
It, that we devalue yes. death. We push it to the margins, we hide it, and at the same time, our society increasingly embraces it. It is a paradox. I agree. I think we don't have a true and profound understanding of the reality of death. That it's a terrible blow, but it's also the gateway to eternal life. It's both
yes.
of those things. And I think a you know, if you go to a funeral, I hate these celebration of life ideas. No, you're mourning death, which is a terrible loss, but you're also accompanying your praying that that person might enter into eternal life and come before God. And I think we've lost both of those aspects, and so we've cheapened death, and in cheapening death, we've also cheapened life, which is I think what we see here is that life becomes cheap because we don't take death seriously.
Absolutely. You know, I remember reading that in the Middle Ages, I wish I could be eloquent here, the people who were dying, you know, of the plague, left and right, people were dying left and right. And one observation was made in the culture was that the Christians died differently. That mm-hmm. when others were dying, when other pagans were dying of this horrible plague, there was this mourning and sorrow. But when the Christians, their loved ones died, there was singing and rejoicing. And they received death very differently. And I think, you know, so in dying, it's been my experience that we really do see what people really do believe about eternity, not the person that's deceased, but the pastor, the priest, the people there. If you really do believe in eternity, you are very different in your approach to death. And if you believe that the person that died is going to eternity, then you don't have that same, there is mourning, but there's joy also. And so it's just very revealing, death is. It's so revealing for all of us, isn't it, Rusty, how we feel about this whole business of assisted suicide, how we feel about death and funerals. And I just believe that the template has been written. It is God's word. And he helps us to sort things out. He makes sense of death. He makes sense of life. And apart from that, we descend into the confusion that we have now. And so I think that is I believe that's the antidote. Is that we introduce God's word into this culture and God himself more powerfully. Rusty, tell us about First Things, just briefly before you go. How could people access it, and what will they see when they access it?
We do fresh material like this wonderful article about keeping the stigma in suicide every day. We do have fresh material on our website, firstthings.com. And then we also have a monthly magazine that has longer feature articles, which you can also access on the website. So
okay.
It's really the best way to get kind of really rich, deep, and profound reflections on the meaning of our faith for politics, the meaning of our faith for our everyday lives, and meaning of faith for the future of Western civilization.
Yes, I love it. And this article, Keep the Stigma Against Suicide, is just excellent, Rusty. I commend it to everyone listening to us. It has a lot more to say than we have even got to, and I think that you will benefit from that, because this is a horrible thing washing over all of us, and I think it's going to get even worse, and that's assisted suicide. So, Rusty, thank you for the good work you do leading First Things, and thanks for talking to us this morning. I appreciate time with you so much. Thank you. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours. It would rescue about 200 babies. To donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. If you can't do that, of course, just give what you can give. $28 sponsors one ultrasound. Again, go to preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Currently, there are 15 countries that in some shape or form permit medical assistance in dying. But check this out. Only 8 of those countries, Austria, Belgium, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Spain, Switzerland, Colombia, and as of 2021, Canada, removed the requirement of a terminal diagnosis in order to receive MAID. And overwhelmingly, Canadians are in full support of physicians being able to offer this compassionate care. 6 in 10 Canadians support MAID. However, only 3 in 10 support the 2024 removal of mental health exclusion. But as the conversation about who gets to decide patient autonomy and consent unfolds, how do we ethically discuss who gets to decide when it is their time to die, and if the safeguards currently in place are enough to keep up with the evolution of the laws regulating this practice?
Oh, well, Canada, Canada, oh, Canada, where Justin Trudeau just, he didn't really resign, just to be clear. He's caused the parliament to disband for the next 3 months because he went to the governor, which oversees the province, who really is out of Great Britain. So technically, they've disbanded the parliament, so they can't vote. And he's at, like, I think a 20% approval rating right now. It's just a mess. So they're in a mess with assisted suicide. They've decided that they're going to postpone being able to kill people who are so-called mentally ill. That means depressed, sad, I don't know. And there's no age limit. They have not allowed that to kick in until, I think, 2028, so say they right now. But it is a sharp, slippery slope that Canada is on, and I think that the whole world is on. They're setting a horrible example. But then again, Canada has become mostly a godless country. Not totally. They have other gods. They've got Muhammad, a lot of Muslims. And they have a kind of God, the God that makes you immune to understanding the real, true, and living God. Sad to me. It really is sad. I've asked Bruce to join me because we were looking at clips yesterday, Bruce, you were pretty startled yourself, weren't you?
I was, especially with it being Canada, where obviously our children are, but even more importantly, it's a country that we can identify with as being a Western civilized modern country.
Well, they give it all such good names. It's just words. You know, they make something that's terrible sound. They always do that. We've talked about this for decades now, whether it was killing babies, it was a women's right to choose. And so they always think of some fluffy thing to call it. And so now for killing people, it's MAID. They bring MAID in.
I really find that offensive, that acronym, MAID, Medical Assistance in Death. Because just using that kind of a term, it trivializes what's going on there. And, you know, we try to figure out, like, why is Canada headed the way it is with this medical suicide? And, obviously there are many factors, but I think one of the things you could track probably is the change in Canada. you just spoken about it in regards to believing in God. If you look at the census that was taken in 2021, the number of people who identify themselves as Christians up in Canada is only 53%. In 2000,
I'm surprised it's that high.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, identifying and practicing don't mean the same thing.
Right.
But in 2001, it was 77%. So you think about that. That's a 24% drop in just 20 years.
Well, it's a lot of it's immigration, but a lot of it's leftward policies. Of course, they are rebelling from those right now, the woke policies. They truly are. And so just God willing, there's going to be a change up there. Like I think there's been a change down here that needs to be, you know, like go in warp speed back to believing in God, because we are, you know, any person, I just want to say, people that don't believe in God, if you, you know, do life your own way, there may be exceptions to this, but most of the time, at some point, you spin out of control because nothing makes sense and you have no moorings. And so it makes the world make sense. It makes life make sense. It makes death make sense. Bruce, I want to say one thing. I honestly can't remember if you were in my life when I saw this or if this was when Jeremy was a boy at home. But Star Trek had one of their episodes on assisted suicide. And I remember, I will never forget it because Dr. Spock was all about it. And it was very efficient, you see. It was the way we, you know, controlled what was happening up here in space because we couldn't have unlimited people flying and feeding. And, you know, so he's saying all these things. And then it came the point where he turned the age that they said. It was like, I don't know, 65 or something like that. And suddenly it hit him that he was going to have to go in. It was voluntary. You had to commit suicide when you got that age. And wow. It was very different when it was happening. He was like, I'm having to think about this. Yeah. It was really profound. It really was.
Well, I have to confess, I have not seen that.
Oh.
But being that Dr. Spock, or Mr. Spock, excuse me, on Star Trek, was always about logic.
Yeah.
That's logic. There was nothing about God in him. It was all about logic. And I think the statement that Rusty made regarding our lives belong to God, not to ourselves, that is the root of the issue here. Is our society has gotten into the, you know, this YOLO, Y-O-L-O, you only live once. So, you know, live it up. It's up to you to do what you want to do. And that is not the way God teaches us about our life. Our lives belong to him. It's like our children, we think they belong to us. They belong to God. All our lives belong to God. And he put us here for a reason. And, you know, I think in our own lives, we've seen both ends of the spectrum when it comes to feeling like, should we let our loved ones pass away? Should we encourage it because of their suffering? You saw it from the beginning of her life almost with your daughter, Sasha, and I saw it with my mother as she got to the last years of her life.
Bruce, can I just interject? Because with Sasha, I'll never forget, she almost died many times. And right after Jeremy was born, she went through a terrible, terrible time of chronic seizures. We took her to Chicago Children's Hospital, Weiler it was called at the time. And I'll never forget, she recovered miraculously. I believe it was my prayers because I was just begging God. I had a new baby and a very sick, disabled child. And I was begging God to help her. And he did, just turned around, and they had no explanation. But they said to me, Bruce, in that moment, that the next time this happens, you need to just let her die. That's what the doctor said to me. That's what they said to me about my six-year-old girl. And I remember how appalled I was, but that's where the medical system was at that point. So that was my experience. And you started to talk about your mom, which I'm so glad, Bruce, because your mother is a quintessential example, the way she died, how she died, of what we're talking about.
I remember the last 10 years of my mom's life were spent in a nursing home, and she was often really on the precipice of death, had major complications from infections, heart issues, all kinds of things. And I remember thinking, gosh, would it be best if mom just passed away? All this suffering, why is she going through this? But yet she would recover. We always called her the rubber ball. She would hit the deck and then bounce back up. And in fact, at one point, she went into hospice and came out of it. We always laugh. We go, Mom, you're the only graduate of hospice
I've ever met
in my life. Right. They said, your mom's good enough. We're going to send her back. But the point of saying this story is those years, much of the time we spent with my mom during those 10 years was some of the richest time I ever remember having with her. And she really was an example of what, when suffering faces people or people face suffering, how to handle it.
She was so gracious, Bruce. And we have to say also that we were not sure where she stood spiritually. And I have to say, Bruce was very close to his mother. She was a beautiful woman, very smart. She majored in chemistry when she was young, in a day when women didn't generally major in chemistry. Gracious, capable, talented. But she loved him so much, and they had a great relationship. So this was a huge grief for Bruce to see her suffer like that. But we were concerned about her spiritually. We weren't sure where she stood. And I know that's what I introduced into your. You had become a Christian, and so you wanted to know. So we should tell them that last story.
So anyway, we were visiting my mom in the nursing home, and we had to catch a flight in like an hour and a half or so. And Sandy said to me, she goes, you know what, Bruce, your mom is doing badly, and you need to know if she really knows Jesus. And I was a little hesitant, but she convinced me, yes, we need to do this. Well, you couldn't really do it in the nursing home. It was too crazy there. So we popped her in her wheelchair, ran her out to the car. We went down to McDonald's, and we sat there, and we thought to each other, we have 20 minutes. Let's... And then we got to get mom back to the nursing home. Then we have to get back to the hospital or the airport. So we sat down with a Diet Coke and asked my mom if she knew Jesus, if she was ready for eternity. And I'll tell you, she gave the most concise and precise presentation of the gospel that I think I've ever heard, and said, "I totally believe in this." And what it was is they had a neighbor who was a pastor, and I didn't realize how much the pastor and his wife had been ministering to my mom, and it had really taken hold with my mom. And Sandy, that was a gift that to this day I'm so grateful to you for, that we know when my mother finally did face, and I was with her when she passed away, when she finally did pass away, we knew where she was going.
And you knew. You knew. Yeah, so the end of that story, so we got to the end of that. She said that. She said, okay, we said, okay, we got to go.
Yeah.
All right,
Mom, you're safe.
You passed the test.
Now let's get back in the car, and we got to get you back to the nursing home, and we got to go.
It was pretty much like that. But this went on over a period of years, and so the point is that in Bruce's compassion, he was hard for him to see his mother suffer, but that suffering really produced something incredible for him. And also something, of course, really eternal for his mother. So we just think we have experience with this, and that's why we have so much passion about it. I think we are done, unless you have anything else, Bruce.
I just wanted to say to people that it is very tough to watch people with certain conditions. I have a friend who just started chemotherapy for stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and of course the diagnosis is not good. But I think it's our duty, especially as Christians, that we follow where God is leading us on these things. And we, again, not to reiterate it too many times, suffering, as Mr. Reno said, can really bring out the best in us. We are not put on this earth to go through with no suffering. And I think nothing can be more comforting to people that are in danger or that are in tough situations than to see other people who are in those situations and are carrying themselves in a way that gives hope.
It's inspiring.
It's inspiring to them.
Just like suicide is contagious, and so is dying with dignity and with poison. So, honey, thank you so much. Again, my husband, you know, the former FBI agent, the former prosecutor, is very tender. And so, honey, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
That's a tender moment in our lives. Well, listen, I hope you've learned something today. I certainly have. I want to remind you to check out Timothy Plan, because it's a place where you can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-10-PLAN. That's 1-800-10-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.